Ululania. Desidora patted her flank again and felt the unicorn shivering faintly. You're all right, and if you're not, we can help. No, I'm fine. I'm fine. Ululania shook herself. I should get the key to my little one. You are certain you are all right? It's a good thing my part in this job is finished, Desidora said, forcing a laugh, as I believe I will be taking it easy as I rejoin Tern and the others at the tunnel. Good. I'm glad. That is why I came, to make sure you were okay. Ululania shifted under Desidora's hands and was a great snowy eagle again. Good luck. I'm sorry. She flapped off into the night, and Desidora watched her go. Only when the eagle was lost in the night sky did Desidora release the tight hold on her thoughts. That's going to get ugly, she muttered, but it was not something to deal with right now. She sank to her knees to shake a bit more. Deep in the most secure rooms of the Sunrise Canyon Processing Center, Westyke looked from the message crystal to Arika Yurichi, still held by Commander Mirok.
Lock is where?
Here,
Arika Yurichi said, and while he had no mouth, Westyke nevertheless got the impression that if the axe had teeth, it would be gritting them.
The miners say that she is leading a group, claiming to have an appointment to inspect the processing center.
The processing center was a magnificent structure, filled with alchemical wonders that surpassed even what Westyke had seen in the Forge of the Ancients. Out in the main room, crystals tended by golem workers rode moving ramps through treatment systems, whose fantastic alchemy turned them from raw material into the magic that ran the Republic. Meanwhile, in the back room, a great array of crystals protruded from one wall in a pattern no mortal eye could follow, great shards glowing in all the colors of the rainbow, while gem-studded control consoles spat out information about the mine and the magic that flowed through it. The entire magic-rich processing center was walled off safely from the mine by several feet of solid Yveskvir plating. It also had impressive security, which Westyke took advantage of now.
Your trackers are incompetent, he snapped,
running a thumb along the control console and snapping rapidly from scrying point to scrying point.
I should have apprehended them before now. If you give me control of the security golems, I can... No.
Arika Yurichi pulled Mirok to attention.
You lack the skill to bring them down. Support Gil's power on the technical work necessary to ready the gate. That fits your abilities. I will handle Locke personally. Of course, absolutely, Westyke said, smiling and thinking about snapping Arika Yurichi over his knee.
He hit another scrying point and stopped.
Entry area, by the way, in case you hadn't located them yet. There's Locke, there's Kale working on the door, and I'm not sure who the elf is. Assist Gil's power, open the gate, Arika Yurichi said,
and held in Mirok's iron grasp, stalked from the room. Westyke glared after him. While he could speak, unlike the Warhammer Gilspower, who had foolishly sacrificed some of his essence and lost most of his vocabulary in the process, Arika Yurichi had proven difficult to impress in Westyke's experience so far. At first, Westyke had been uncertain, even worried, that it might in some way reflect upon him. Then he had realized who Arika Yurichi was. As the living soul of an ancient, Arika Yurichi had seemed impressive, and Westyke had nearly fallen into the same trap of blindness that had struck weaker minds. But Arika Yurichi had been here in this world for centuries, waiting for the proper time, diligent in his duty. It was impressive, yes, as the gears of a well-made clock were impressive. But that did not make the gears special or deserving of respect beyond that for a tool that had served its function. Anyone who stayed behind to do the dirty work for centuries was not the leader of his people. The leader would be in the world of the ancients, planning thoughtfully amid whatever luxury that other world had to offer, as befitting his station. That was who Westyke had to impress, not some cynical ground operative. Westyke would let Arika Yurichi deal with Locke and take credit for it, despite Westyke's use of the scrying points to actually locate the woman. While the axe did his duty, Westyke would prove his worth by seeing the ancients into this world in glory. Since Arika Yurichi had forgotten to do so, Westyke did reach over and activate the alarms, however. Locke looked up as the alarms went off, long, blaring sirens, unmistakable for anything else but a warning about intruders. "New plan," she said, looking around.
"We have no means of advancing our goal," Irithelath Leolan said. "We must leave now."
"We leave, Dairy dies," Locke said, and stepped outside. "He dies, the ancients return," Kale added from right behind her.
The elf stepped out behind them, muttering to himself. The workers on the dock looked at them in confusion, none ready to approach. At the end of the dock, Kale's sad excuse for an airship was still safely moored. Inside the main hangar, massive lifting golems slowly maneuvered crates onto pallets for transport, and rails ran to the great double doors that led down to the mine proper.
"Not to agree with Ethel," Kale said quietly.
"But how do we fight Gilspower?
I mean, our big heavy hitter for going toe-to-toe with the tough bad guys was Gilspower."
"A weapon holding the soul of an ancient contains certain key alchemical compounds,"
Irithelath Leolan said behind them.
"The proper acids could damage the metal, even dissolve it."
"Good to know.
For now, the mine," Locke said, and started forward, walking stick banging on the stone of the hangar floor. The door to the waiting room crashed open behind them, and a group of men trooped out. While the security guard Locke had taken down earlier wore ringmail and a blocky helmet, these men wore long dark coats fitted with strips of silver and undershirts reinforced with similar banding. Each carried a staff tipped at each end with a silver metal cap. They seemed a lot wealthier and a lot less friendly than the normal security guard had, and had a look that Locke couldn't quite place. Not quite military, but formal nevertheless, all of them with chiseled jaws and short haircuts.
"Think we found the guys who run things in the processing area," Kale said. "Those may be the whitest men I've ever seen."
Irithelath Leolan's hand slid into his robes.
"They will be redder in a moment."
"Wait."
Locke stepped back past them toward the men. Six of them, not the best odds.
"Listen to me," she said. "You want to arrest us, great, but something is happening down in one of the old mining tunnels. Something strange has been happening here lately, hasn't it?"
"What has been happening?" sneered one of the guards. "Is the return of the ancients, Urijar Thug?"
"Ah," Kale said from behind Locke.
"So they're in on that, then."
"Makes things easier," Locke said, and cracked the nearest guard across the face with the head of her walking stick. As he fell, she shoved him into another and swung down at a third, hooking his staff. She pulled, yanked the staff from his grasp, and punched the walking stick into his throat as the others charged in.
The one coming in spun his staff. Locke stepped in, used both hands to catch the staff with her stick, kicked him in the knee, and slammed an elbow into his face as he stumbled.
"Nobles," she said, and saw that the others were down as well. Kale stood over one, holding a staff and wiggling the fingers of his other hand, while Irithelath Leolan stood over two more, his wood-bladed rapier having appeared from the folds of his robe as if by magic.
"These are nobles."
"Oh, yeah, you can tell by the chin," said Kale. "It's an old money chin."
Irithelath Leolan smiled.
"So the nobles of your republic have sent their sons to assist the ancients in returning. How delightfully human."
A white shape flapped over the dock and into the hangar. The air around it shimmered, and Ulilenia dropped into a crouched landing, a pale woman with ash-blonde hair and a white dress with, Locke squinted, two black shapes on the hip. The few remaining dock workers simply ran away at this point, which was fine with Locke, given that the alarm was still blaring, so subtlety was, by and large, no longer an option.
"Your key, little one," Ulilenia said, still breathing heavily, her hands on her knees.
"Change in plans," Locke said.
Ulilenia shot her a look, and then seemed to notice the blaring siren.
"As the wolf bays on the trail of the fleeing vixen, so your entrance has encountered difficulty."
"She said change in plans," Kale said. "You all right?"
"She is killed again," Irithelath Leolan said. "Was it easier this time? I hear it gets easier."
"Perhaps I should slice open your belly and ride you as you slowly bleed to death," Ululenia said, still crouching.
coaxing you with gentle caresses into the very motions that would send your guts spilling to the earth. And then I can tell you, if that felt easier... She paused, then looked at Locke. I am fine.
Yes, we can tell, Kale said. That was the kind of thing a fine person would say.
Key, Locke said, and Ululenia tossed it over, a simple crystal that glowed with a pattern Locke's eyes could almost trace.
Now, we need Desidora. Derry is in the death zone, not the processing center. Without Desidora's magic, we have no way to get to him.
My virgin.
Neither yours nor virgin, Irithelith Leolan pointed out.
Nevertheless, Ululenia shook her head and rose back to her feet. I will get Desidora.
Tell her that Gil's power is here, Kale said.
Ululenia started, then nodded. Without another word, she shifted back into an eagle and took to the skies.
It's so dramatic when the old ones finally taste blood, Irithelith Leolan said.
Later, Locke started for the great double doors. For now, the mine and the processing center. The death zone isn't an option until Desidora gets back, but we can sure as hell find whatever Project Paladin is and hit it with wrenches. There were dock workers between them and the looming entranceway. Locke held the walking stick up as she approached.
Not your fight, she said, and they scattered.
She pulled the lever to open the great double doors, and they creaked and strained, using gears and not magic, as they swung out to either side. Inside, the mine was lit by well-shielded glow lamps strung along the ceiling. The cart rails led into a large opening chamber, and then split. To the right, they ran to a lift leading down to the tunnels, while to the left, they ran to a large sealed door, forged from reinforced Yveskvir.
Expensive, Irithelith Leolan said. The dwarven metal shields that entire area against magic.
Processing center, then, Kale said.
They got to the door. Locke saw a crystal square beside the doorframe and held the key out toward it. The crystal square chimed and glowed, and the door clunked and whirred and made a lot of gear noises as it slid open. Inside, she could see what had to be the processing center. A great moving belt lifted crystals up from the mine below onto a rattling platform where they were sorted for size. From there, other moving belts carried the crystals off in different directions to vats and assembly chambers, magical and alchemical wonders that turned the raw crystals into the devices used throughout the Republic. The belts snaked back and forth across the massive room so that the entire area was in constant motion. Golem stood watch at key points. They were simple, functional models built for durability rather than grace, fitted with impressive lenses, that Locke guessed let them spot hidden flaws in the crystals that slid by. At the far side of the processing center, overhead crystals with harsh azure lights brighter than daylight bathed the long table with their glow. Objects rested on the table, but she couldn't see what they were from the doorway. She started into the room. Then she looked at the golems, still patiently doing their job, while the security alarm continued to blare out its ear-splitting siren. She lifted a hand to Kale and signalled trap in the sign language they'd learned in the scouts. Then she dove into the room, going in low and rolling as she hit the ground. The axe ripped into the doorframe where her head would have been, and as Locke came back to her feet, the hunter golem holding it yanked it free and turned to her. While they were difficult to tell apart, this one looked charred and scraped in a few places, which made Locke suspect it was the one she'd fought at the Forge of the Ancients. The axe, however, she definitely recognized.
Isifacera de Lochinville, Arica Eurici said. I cannot tell you how much I've been looking forward to this.